For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Correa, filling in for Bob Levicky. In Charlottesville, people remember August 12, 2017, while an investigation falls behind schedule. Virginia Republicans warm to some gun control measures. There's a new legal front in the battle over the Mountain Valley Pipeline. And JMU students do archaeology in Stanton. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, August 13, 2019. 2 years ago, Heather Heyer was killed during the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. Two others also died that day. Troopers Burke Bates and Jay Cullen were killed when their helicopter crashed. As Mallory Nopain reports, a federal investigation into what caused the crash still hasn't concluded.
A preliminary report released less than a month after the crash didn't say what the cause was, although it did note the helicopter hadn't collided with anything before it went down. The National Transportation Safety Board originally estimated it would take a year to a year and a half to complete the full inquiry. It's now been 2 years. Spokesman Eric Weiss says the investigation is still in the fact-gathering phase.
And then, after that, we will go into the analysis phase, and our aviation investigators will determine the probable cause for the accident and any safety recommendations that might be issued.
Bates and Cullen, two state troopers, were monitoring the August 12th rally from the air. They recorded video of the murderous car attack that prosecutors were able to use in court. Their helicopter crashed about 3 hours later. Bates was a hockey fan, Cullen an avid cyclist. They were each a husband and a father. I'm Mallory Nopain.
Survivors of the deadly car attack on August 12th, 2017, gathered at the site yesterday to pay their respects. Hawes Spencer from VPM News filed this report.
An Ohio man is locked up for life on multiple counts of malicious wounding and murder. But this was a day to remember the victims, including 32-year-old activist Heather Heyer. Patrick Migas watched survivors hold hands and sing songs.
I think the people of Charlottesville are becoming better people. We're learning from all these tragedies.
Former Mayor Mike Signer agrees.
August 12th unleashed a lot, including a real hunger for a new emphasis on equity and social justice.
Since that day in 2017, Charlottesville has created a civilian review board of the police and bolstered spending on education and affordable housing. In Charlottesville, Hawes Spencer, WMRA News.
Last week, President Trump came out in favor of federal legislation designed to keep guns away from people who may harm themselves or others. Several Virginia Republicans say they support similar measures in the Commonwealth. Also from VPM News, Ben Pavier reports.
Republican delegate Jason Mieres of Virginia Beach proposed his own version of a red flag law in July when the legislature met for a special session on gun violence.
What you constantly see with some of these mass shootings is people have said repeatedly that they saw this coming.
Mieres' bill has the support of at least two House Republicans, GOP Caucus Chair Tim Hugo and Delegate Glenn Davis of Virginia Beach. It would allow judges to take a person into custody and restrict their access to firearms for up to 14 days if they're found to be a threat to themselves or others. A spokesperson for House Democrats said that approach would stigmatize the mentally ill and strain law enforcement. The Virginia Crime Commission will consider this and other gun violence-related bills when it meets next week. Ben Pavier, WMRA News.
Yesterday, opponents of the Mountain Valley Pipeline filed another legal attack. This one over the pipeline's impact on endangered species. The Daily Progress reports that the petition asks a federal appeals court in Richmond to force the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to re-examine its 2017 opinion that burrowing a 42-inch diameter pipe across rugged mountain slopes and through unspoiled streams will not significantly harm the threatened species that live there. At the same time, the Sierra Club and other environmental groups sent a letter to the service requesting that it immediately stay its permits pending legal review, a move that could bring work on the project to a standstill. Already, construction of the natural gas pipeline across streams and wetlands and through the Jefferson National Forest has been stalled by earlier legal challenges. A spokeswoman for the Fish and Wildlife Service had not received notice of the legal action late Monday and declined to comment. Also in environmental news, Appalachia is known for its abundance of water. But a new study finds that climate change could have a strange effect here, causing both more floods and more droughts. From Virginia Public Radio, Robbie Harris reports.
If nothing is done to mitigate temperature rise, Appalachia is likely to become not only hotter, but wetter and drier. How can it be both? West Virginia University hydrologist Nicholas Zegg just completed a study of the entire seven-state region.
As the atmosphere warms, evaporation increases. So water that is in the trees, on the soils, in our crops, evaporates more quickly.
And with all that water held in the atmosphere, when it rains, it pours.
In the steep topography of the Appalachian region, what this translates to is landslides and floods.
Zegg says the flip side of this increased evaporation from those higher temperatures means there's less water in the landscape.
We are expecting both too much water and too little water in the future, and you can imagine how hard it is to run businesses and communities with that sort of variability.
The study breaks it down into two-mile sections of the region in an effort to help communities and governments plan ahead. Overall, northern areas are expected to become wetter and southern drier by 2050, with a rise in temperature of as much as 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit, if nothing is done.
Following 2050, under the stabilization scenario, the best case scenario, we actually see the return of the climate system to historical conditions. Under the high emission scenario, which again represents business as usual, we actually see an increase in precipitation throughout the 21st century.
The team will soon release a searchable data set where anyone can click to see what the future may hold for their counties and communities. I'm Robbie Harris.
And finally today, an archaeological dig is currently underway in the gardens at the Woodrow Wilson Presidential Library in Stanton. It's a follow-up to another dig at the same place last year. But the leaders of this summer's project are a little different from those involved last year. They're students from James Madison University. WMRA's Mike Tripp has the story.
Hands sift gravel back and forth across the wire shaker screen, allowing dirt to fall away. They search for items of interest, possible artifacts. Pull from the screen, one item is passed to Katie Brockman. The student from James Madison University turns it over in her hand, studies it carefully.
So this is a bottle lip and a little bit of the neck. I'm trying to determine its age by looking for the seams so you can tell whether it was handmade versus molded, like machine made, or some combination thereof in order to determine the age. And so this looks like it's a 19th century bottle, which is pretty cool, and in the time frame that we're looking for in this place.
Working as lead, Brockman is one of a few JMU students assisting with the project. Along with some volunteers, they are working with Dennis Blanton, an associate professor of anthropology at JMU.
The concept behind the student involvement is learning by doing, and we've turned the project over to the students in many respects so that they can do just that.
In particular, Blanton praises Brockman's work.
She has a long history of doing archaeology, but as importantly, she helped us in the archaeology laboratory at JMU process all the artifacts from last summer. And on top of that, I asked her to be a co-author on the final technical report about our findings here, which qualifies her eminently to be in charge of the field crew this summer.
Last summer's work led the team this year back to the backyard of what is called the manse, the house where President Woodrow Wilson was born in 1856.
So last year what we had done was excavate small, they're called shovel tests, that went all around the property in order to identify artifact concentrations and see maybe where different kinds of artifacts are over the property.
I was a bit dubious, to be honest, when we started that there would be anything with any integrity. There's been a lot of gardening and other things that might have disrupted any archaeology that had been here. But we were happy to discover that there's an awful lot still intact.
But why? What is it they hope to learn?
So it will teach us about the everyday lives of these people, and this, and it can also help in terms of date. Certain artifacts can help date, like the area that you're digging in. So they'll go back to the lab and be analyzed there for things like that.
Discoveries have included buttons, pottery, small bones, part of an old smoking pipe, locations of former structures like a privy or an outhouse, artifacts likely predating the manse. And these are just a few. Although these discoveries are important, the experience itself is priceless.
A little challenging sometimes, you know, when you got things happening in five different places, but not bad. I think it's going well. Other JMU students are great. All the volunteers have been wonderful.
Lily Fisher uses the trowel methodically, excavating the trench, or test unit she kneels within. She's one of the other JMU students on site.
I really enjoy looking at the different material culture found here, especially with the church setting, like the amount of porcelain found in comparison with maybe other outside sites and what that means for the social standing of the people who lived here. And then just to get to experience what stuff looks like coming up from the ground and know what you need to look for, it's a big help.
The three students are all paid to do this. My goal is to come out here and support them, but otherwise I put them in the situation of making the decisions that need to be made. So they're not just following instructions, they're giving instructions.
For WMRA News, I'm Mike Tripp.
Learn more about this story at WMRA.org and through the WMRA app. For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Correa. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Tuesday.